Osho, the Buddha, the emptiness of the heart, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 8.
Beloved Bhagwan, Engo said, the enlightened man enjoys perfect freedom in active life. He is like a dragon supported by deep waters, or like a tiger that commands its mountain retreat. The man who is not enlightened drifts about in the affairs of the world. He is like a ram that gets its horns caught in a fence, or like a man who waits for a hare to run against a tree stump and stun itself. The enlightened man's words are sometimes like a lion crouched to spring, sometimes like the diamond king's treasure sword. Sometimes their effect is to shut the mouths of the world-famed ones. Sometimes it is as if they simply follow the waves coming one after another. When the enlightened man meets others who are enlightened, then friend meets friend. He values them and they encourage each other. When he meets those who are adrift in the world, then master meets disciple. His way of dealing with such people is far-sighted. He stands firm before them, like a thousand-fathom cliff. Therefore it is said that the way of the Absolute is manifest everywhere. It has no fixed rules and regulations. The master sometimes makes a blade of grass stand for the golden-faced Buddha, 16 feet high, and sometimes makes the golden-faced Buddha, 16 feet high, stand for a blade of grass. On another occasion, Engo said, the universe is not veiled. All its activities lie open. Whichever way he may go, the enlightened man meets no obstruction. At all times, he behaves independently. His every word is devoid of egocentricity, yet still has the power to kill others. Once the delusive way of thinking is cut off, a thousand eyes are suddenly opened, one word blocking a stream of thought, and all non-actions are controlled. Is there anyone who would undergo the experience of dying the same death and living the same life as the Buddha? Truth is manifest everywhere.
Manisha. This is the last part of the series of the Buddha the empty heart. It is very appropriate, exactly in right time, that you have brought a great master Engo's statement about the enlightened man. for centuries man has been thinking about the definition of enlightenment. And successive efforts had been made. But nobody has been able to bring a perfect definition of enlightenment or of enlightened man. Ingo comes very close, almost to the point, and he has to be heard with absolute silence. He is saying something which is difficult to say. His effort is tremendously valuable. He says about the enlightened man. The enlightened man enjoys perfect freedom in active life. That is his foundation of the coming other statements. It has to be understood with all its implications. The unconscious man lives according to others. Either following them or denying them. But the point always is the other. So there are followers and there are anti-followers. There are theists and there are atheists. But at the very foundation they are not different. One is positively in favor of some doctrine and one is negative, reactive against the same doctrine, but both are hanging with something other than themselves. They are other oriented. I am always reminded of Jayapal Sartre and his statement. That the other is the hell. He may have made it in a different context, but in itself the statement is valuable. I want you to know the other is hell because the other takes away your freedom. It may be done with very lovingly, without any bad intention. It may be done with all good intentions, but it does not matter. The ancient saying is that the path to hell is paved with good intentions. The parents, the teachers, the neighbors, the friends, all are continuously giving a shape to your life, a style to your life. If you look into your mind, you will find many voices together. Your father is speaking, your grandfather is speaking, your mother, your brother, your teacher, your professor. But you will not find only one thing there, your voice. Your voice has been completely repressed by other voices. Layer upon layer, you have lost even the track of your own voice, of your own self, of your own face. So many masks. And when a small child comes into the world, he is just a clean slate. And you start immediately writing on his slate without even bothering to take his permission. You make him a Christian, you make him a Hindu, you make him a Mohammedan, you make him anything you want to make him. And you don't understand that consciousness is not something that you can give a mode, a certain pattern. What ultimately happens with all your efforts and intentions is a hypocrite, a person who knows that he is doing it, but his heart is not in it. He becomes phony. He becomes a slave of all the others who surround, not only the living ones, but the dead ones also are creating your slavery. Ingo's statement that the enlightened man enjoys perfect freedom in active life is not a slave to any tradition, to any culture, to any civilization. He lives according to his own spontaneity, according to his own awareness. And that is one of the troubles, that the enlightened person is bound to be misunderstood. Because the whole world is full of slaves. They cannot understand the language of freedom. It is almost selling eyeglasses to the world of blind people. Even if they have the glass, it is of no use. They cannot see, they don't have the eyes. A man reached one eye specialist and asked him, "Check my eye, and do you think I will be able, if you prescribe glasses, to read?" The eye specialist said, of course, you will be able to reach. He prescribed the glasses were made, but the man asked, by the way, I must inform you that I don't know how to read. The man said, you are strange. You should have said this before, because even with glasses, if you don't know how to read, you are not going to read. People are carrying scriptures which describe about freedom, which describe about freedom from scriptures. People are worshipping statues of persons like Gautam Buddha, whose last words were that, remember, these are my last words, my last wish, that my statues should not be made. And 10,000 sannyasins were listening, and as it happened, in the world there are now more statues of Gautam Buddha than anybody else. Even a single temple in China has 10,000 Buddhas. The whole mountain has been carved into Buddha statues. Miles long. It is a strange blindness. It is a strange misunderstanding. And a man of freedom is bound to be condemned by the slaves, because the slaves cannot accept the idea that they are slaves. So anybody who is enlightened and becomes a man of freedom becomes a danger to millions of egos. His freedom to fly across the sky with open wings is bound to be condemned by all those who are crippled. Who are caught into cages. The cages may be of gold, very precious, cozy, a good shelter, but the joy of being on your own wings in the sky, unlimited, with no barriers, no boundaries, is much more valuable than any golden cage. Ingo says the enlightened man enjoys perfect freedom in actual life. He is not bound by any morality, not bound by any rules, not bound by any ethos, not bound by any society, any civilization, any culture, any education, he remains true and honest to his own being. He does not care whether his action is going against the society, whether his action is going against the scriptures. All that he is committed is to his own spontaneous response. He has no other commitment. He cannot be a Christian or a Mohammedan or a Jew or a Jaina. He can simply be a human being without any fetters. But naturally he has to suffer. He has to suffer because the whole crowd is of slaves, blind people. They feel hurt, deeply hurt by his presence, by his freedom. They continuously compare and feel deep down guilty that they have never stood up for their own freedom. They have remained a sheep. Just part of a crowd, they never declared their individuality. And now there is a man of absolute freedom. Those who have any intelligence will fall in love with this man of freedom. But very few people have intelligence. Most of the people live without any intelligence in their life, a robot life, almost mechanical. They all are going to be against such persons in the name of religion, in the name of morality, in the name of society, in the name that these people are dangerous. If everybody starts functioning according to his own, then there will be no society, no state, no nation, no army, no war, and the whole society is committed to such stupid things that a man of enlightened freedom cannot be committed to any of them. He cannot be an Indian or a French or a Chinese. The whole earth is one for him, and his every action is according to his own consciousness, not according to any teaching. Some dead so-called wise people may have decided he has his own eyes to see, why he should listen to others? He has his own ears to hear, why he should listen to others? He has his own consciousness to decide, why he should follow the 10 commandments of Moses? are the Sermon on the Mount of Jesus, are the Srimad Bhagavad Gita of Krishna. They may be beautiful, but they are not going to guide your life. The moment you have a guideline from others, you are spiritually a slave. In other words, Ingo is saying the enlightened man lives according to his own life source without any consideration or compromise with the crowd. He is absolutely an individualist. And he wants everybody else also to be individualist. There is nothing more valuable than freedom. Because only in freedom you can blossom to your ultimate potentiality. As a slave, you are crippled. You are cursed. You are in a mold. You are in chains. You are in cages. Different size of cages, different forms of cages, but remember one thing, that which has not arisen within yourself is always some kind of slavery. The first definition of the enlightened man is perfect freedom in active life. He is bound to be condemned. Because the crowd gets disturbed. The crowd gets disturbed because such a man is going to destroy your slavery, which you think is a very cozy and safe lifestyle. I am reminded of a story. In a mountainous region, a man of freedom rested for a day in a caravansaray, and that caravansaray had a beautiful parrot. The owner has taught the parrot . The parrot was continuously asking for freedom. Freedom. It was strange. The stranger, enlightened man who has stayed, he could not believe this whole thing. Because first you put him in the cage and then you teach him to repeat freedom. If the owner is honest, he should give him freedom. In the night he could not resist. He woke up, opened the door of the cage of the parrot, and told the parrot, now the doors are open and the whole sky is yours, get out. and the parrot was clinging to the cage and is still shouting loudly, "Freedom! Freedom!" Finally the man said, "This is strange, the door is open, and why you are clinging to the cage?" He forced his hand inside, took the parrot out. He was very unwilling, gave a good resistance, scratched his hand, but the man took him out and threw the parrot into the sky, and he felt a deep relief, went to sleep. In the morning, the first thing he heard was freedom. He looked out, the parrot was inside the cage, the door was still open. Outside the cage, it is such a vast life. One becomes afraid. There are enemies. There will be days too cold. There will be nights too hot. There will be times you will have to go hungry. There will be nobody continuously protecting you. And once you have become accustomed to live in a cage, freedom becomes a very dangerous idea. 21 countries have decided about me that I am a dangerous man. And I have not killed a single ant in my whole life. I have never used even a paper knife. And 21 countries' parliaments decide that I am a dangerous man. And nobody asks, what is the definition of danger? Why this man is dangerous? I am not a terrorist. I am not teaching people how to make bombs. I am not an anarchist. But the danger is that I spread the fire of freedom. I wake up people that unless you demand your freedom from all kinds of chains, handcuffs, from all kinds of cages, you can never be a Gautam Buddha. You will never know the joys and the blessings and the ecstasies of freedom. You will never know your own eternity. You will always be afraid of death, not knowing that death is a fiction. It is very superficial. It occurs only on the surface. Inside, life continues forever and forever. But to know all this, you need freedom. And this freedom is not social or political or economical. This freedom is spiritual. You need to go inside yourself and find that space which has not been chained yet. Finding that space from where your life arises, you will attain enlightenment and freedom together. They are two different names for the same single experience. Ingo says, he is like a dragon supported by deep waters, or like a tiger that commands its mountain retreat. The man who is not enlightened drifts about in the affairs of the world. Just watch yourself. What you have been doing in the world, just drifting like dead wood. No direction, no dimension, no clarity, no vision, just following a crowd, not even knowing where you are going, just trusting that the crowd must be knowing if so many people are going. Then we must be right, because so many people cannot be wrong. And the reality is, so many people cannot be right. To be right is a very unique experience. To be right is to be enlightened. Beware of this unconscious calculation that because the whole world is doing something, it must be right, so many people cannot be wrong. This is our arithmetic we have been living. So we stumble, we grope in the darkness, and we follow this man, we follow that man, and we never think that if we are alive, then there must be a source within us, has to be, otherwise from where our life comes. And without knowing this source, even if you are following a Buddha, you are going to be astray. Because every individual is so unique, you can never follow anybody. The man who is not enlightened drifts about in the affairs of the world. Your life, if it is not enlightened, is nothing but a drifting. A strange incident happened. I had gone to take an entry into a college. And there they gave me a form to fill. One young man of my age was also holding a form in his hand. He looked at my form and he said, "What subjects you are filling?" I said, "That is none of your business. You fill your subject." He said, "I don't know what subjects to fill." So he looked into my form, and because I had filled philosophy, psychology, politics, he filled those same. I said, "This is very strange." He said, "No, because I don't know what to do with my life." We graduated from the same university, and then I changed the university, and it was such a surprise that when I entered into the office, that same fellow was still waiting with his form. He said, "You have come. I have been wondering what to do. It has been such a joy to fill the form according to you. Now what you are going to study for your post-graduation?" I said, "This is very stupid." He said, "No, it has been a great relief that at least somebody knows where he is going. And I am following so he looked at my form and filled accordingly philosophy, religion, psychology. I said, "This is not a right way of living. It is becoming a carbon copy." And he said, "I am perfectly at ease. If you are filling these subjects, these must be the best subjects available in the university." I said, "I have no objection." In my postgraduate class, I was there and one of the professors was a very orthodox Brahmin from Bengal. So orthodox that I have never come across anybody else. He would not teach with open eyes because there were two girls in the class. Girls he cannot see. He is a celibate. I had a good opportunity so I slept all the time. And he thought that perhaps I am also a great celibate. Those two girls and this boy who has been following me, the professor was very inquisitive. One day he got hold of me in the library and asked that it is very rare to find people in these days who are committed to celibacy. I said, you are under wrong impression. Said, wrong impression? I said, why you are closing your eyes? He said, I am a celibate and I don't want to see any female face. I said, that is true, that is also my reason, because those both girls are not worth seeing. But it is not celibacy. Day after day, the same two girls, I simply keep my eyes closed. He said, my life. We are doing the same action, but our reasons are so different. And that boy was left and he was such a great follower that he was at a loss what to do. To close eyes according to me, because I am closing, the professor is closing, and just those two girls, but he was very much interested in those girls. Although the girls were not showing any sign of interest in him, he was very much disappointed. He told me that you will have to help me. You have always helped. Since I entered in college, you have been of great help. Now you have to help. I said, what is the problem? He said, the problem is that I try every way to talk to those girls. They don't take any interest in me. They don't even care about me. They pass by my side as if I am not there. It hurts. I said, you have to do something rightly. So I wrote a love letter for him. And I said that tomorrow you deliver it yourself. He said, this is very dangerous. You have made me sign on it. It is, you have written all these things. And if I am caught, if the girl freaks out or anything, I said, you don't be worried. I will prepare the girl, because I have taken the responsibility. That's why I am saying tomorrow you deliver. Just give me one day's chance to prepare the girl. I have told to the girl that this boy is very poor. spiritually poor. He needs compassion. The girl said, what I can do? I said, you have not to do anything. He will deliver a love letter to you tomorrow. You accept it with a smile and face. He said, you are creating a trouble. I don't like that fellow. I said, there is no question of liking or not liking. You can even hate that fellow, but receiving the letter, just like a nice lady, it is not against any mannerism, any etiquette. You see, if you say, I will accept the letter, and I told them, it is not the end, you have to write a letter too. He said, my God, you are creating a trouble for me. If my father comes to know, and his father was the collector of that city, if he comes to know, he is a dangerous fellow. He even can shoot. He goes on signing his gun every day, and he has told me that don't get involved in any love affair, otherwise somebody is going to be shot. I said, I will prepare your father, you don't be worried. If anybody is going to be shot, I am the fellow who is ready. Because I have nothing to lose. It is perfectly good. He can suit me. But you will have to write a letter. Because this fellow needs just a hope. Don't write too many sweet things. Just said, okay, I will try, but I don't know, I have never written a love letter. I said, my God, I will write. So I wrote a love letter, he signed it. So few love letters were changed. Finally, the girl came to me that my father seems to become suspicious. And you have put me into trouble. Because now that boy has at least 7 letters signed by me. I said, that boy is not a real person, he is a carbon copy. You don't be worried about him. I will take away all your letters. I told the boy that, listen, the father of the girl is very dangerous. And he keeps polishing his gun. He said, my God, you never said before where he lives. Said he is a collector and he lives in the city, 3-4 miles away from the university. But now your life is in danger. He said, you wrote those letters. I said, that does not matter who wrote. What matters is who signed. He said, now save me somehow. I don't want to get into trouble. If I had known that love means trouble, I would have not fallen in love. So I said, you gave all those letters back to me. He said, then what will happen about my letters which are in the girl's hand? I said, I will take those letters also. He said, don't forget, because those 7 letters will keep me always falling in love. Just I have to copy one letter, because I cannot manage. You have made such beautiful letters. I don't care that the girl is lost, but those letters, I will miss my whole life. I took away from both the sides the letters. After 10 years, I found him in another city. He has become a professor. And he has a wife and children. I said, you managed perfectly well. He said, the whole credit goes to you, those letters. They worked miraculously. I have tried on many girls, but was refused. But this girl, and I saw why this girl, because she was not much of a girl. Even she has some mustache growth. I said to him that you are a fool. You could have at least inquired me. I said, I would have managed some other girl. There are so many girls, the whole world is full of girls. And you are such a nice looking fellow. He said, something is wrong with this girl. It is not a girl at all. Look at her mustache. I have come across only 2 women. One was this girl, and one was one of my principal's daughters. She had a little beard. I think it is perfectly good. There is no harm. But I said to that fellow that you are an idiot from the very beginning. And without my help, you should not have taken this step. He said, now it is too late. I have got 3 children. All ugly. I told him that it was absolutely certain that he will do something nasty like this. He said, is it something wrong with my children? Nothing new. Will you ever mature? I don't think in this life he said, but everybody says, looking at my children, how nice they look. I said, whenever somebody says to a woman that her child looks very nice, that simply means that the child is ugly. I told him about an incident that happened in a bus. A woman was having her child and an old drunkard came across, looked very closely to the child and said, my God, this must be the ugliest child in the whole world. The woman started crying and weeping. These things are not to be told. But a drunk fellow, the bus was stopped because the driver said it doesn't seem right that the woman is crying. So he went to the woman and he said, don't cry. That fellow was a drunk and I don't know what he has said to you, but I will bring a cup of tea. So he brought a cup of tea and gave to the woman and said, just drink the tea and forget what that drunkard did. And I have also brought a banana for your monkey. People never think what kind of children they are having. The drunkard was at least honest. The driver was also honest. But unconscious people go on doing things without any reason and rhyme. The unconscious man is basically a follower. In every dimension of life, he don't have any sense to find out a direction for himself. He is always looking for somebody to guide him. He is bound to fall into a long dark night which has no end. One thing has to be decided by every individual, particularly my people have to decide it, that find out your own life source and find out what are the potentials and let them grow. Even if you are against the whole world, at least you will be fulfilled in your freedom. Otherwise, you became just a driftwood. Anybody gives you a shape, anybody gives you a direction, anybody gives you guidelines. Ingo continues, is like a ram that gets its horns caught in a fence, or like a man who waits for a hare to run against a tree stump and stun himself. The enlightened man's words are sometimes like a lion crouched to spring, sometimes like the diamond king's treasure sword, sometimes their effect is to shut the mouth of the world famed ones, sometimes it is as if they simply follow the waves coming one after another. When the enlightened man meets others who are enlightened, then friends meet friends. He values them and they encourage each other to go even beyond enlightenment. When he meets those who are adrift in the world, the master meets disciples. His way of dealing with such people is far-sighted. He stands firm before them like a 1,000-fathom cliff. Therefore it is said that the way of the Absolute is manifest everywhere. It has no fixed rules and regulations. The master sometimes makes a blade of grass. It stands for the golden-faced Buddha, 16 feet high, and sometimes makes the golden-faced Buddha 16 feet high. It stands for a blade of grass. You all know about a Zen master who was staying in a temple just for the overnight. It was a cold night And in Japan, Buddha statues are made of wood. In India, they are made of marble. You will not find even one single wooden Buddha in India. But in Japan, they use wood, and very aesthetically, there were three Buddhas in the temple, and it was very cold night, so the master took one Buddha and managed some fire. The priest of the temple lived nearby. He suddenly saw light and fire inside the temple. He came running. He said, "I was from the very beginning suspicious. Your every activity seems to be out of tune with others. What you have done, you have burnt one of my Buddha." And I gave you shelter, and this is the way you have shown your gratefulness. The master took his staff and started looking in the ashes. Buddha was gone. The priest said, "What are you doing now?" He said, "I am looking for the bone." The priest said, "You are really crazy. It was a wooden Buddha. A wood does not have bones." The master said, "You are intelligent. You can understand. Now look, the night is still halfway, and it is too cold, and you have got two Buddhas more. And while a living Buddha is suffering from cold, you are protecting your wooden Buddhas. Just get one of the Buddhas here." The priest just took hold of the master and forced him out of the temple. "You will destroy my whole temple." And in the morning he saw that the same master, just in front of the temple there was a milestone. He has picked few wild flowers and has put those wild flowers on the stone and was sitting in deep meditation by the side. He said, "My God, he has destroyed a Buddha in the night, and now on a milestone he has put flowers as if it is a Buddha. And by the side he is sitting in deep meditation." So he came out, shook him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I am worshipping the Buddha." If you can worship wood, what is wrong in worshipping a stone? Yes, your Buddha was a little shapely, well cut design. My Buddha is rough, but it is a perfect Buddha. As far as meditation is concerned, I can use anything to show my gratitude, the whole existence is one. A man of enlightened freedom can make the golden-faced Buddha 16 feet high, and sometimes makes the golden-faced Buddha 16 feet high stand for a blade of grass. He is not confined by any rules and regulations. He is not confined by any etiquette or mannerism. His freedom is total. He acts out of his spontaneity, love, compassion, but he does not follow any rules. You cannot expect a Buddha that he will do the same thing tomorrow that he did today. He will say, today is today and tomorrow is tomorrow. Today this is my response in this context. Tomorrow the context will be different and my response is going to be different. I respond to situations not with any prejudice but with pure empty heart. On another occasion, Ingo said, the universe is not will. All its activities lie open. Whichever way he may go, the enlightened man meets no obstruction. At all times, he behaves independently. His every word is devoid of egocentricity, yet it still has the power to kill others. Once the delusive way of thinking is cut off, a thousand eyes are suddenly opened. One word blocking the stream of thought, and all non-actions are controlled. Is there anyone who would undergo the experience of dying the same death and living the same life as the Buddha? Truth is manifest everywhere. The enlightened man lives a life of freedom. He also dies a death of utter freedom. Neither life can make him a slave nor death. Gautam Buddha himself, one day early morning, 25 centuries before, told Ananda that call all the monks together under those two sal trees which he always loved. He used to sit under those sal trees for meditation or for talking. He said, arrange a bed for me under those sal trees because I am going to leave the body. and inform everybody that if they want to ask any questions, they should ask. All the monks gathered they had tears in their eyes, but Buddha said tears won't help. If you have any question, you can ask, because tomorrow I will not be here. The old elder, enlightened disciples said that you have spoken for 42 years. You have said everything that is needed for a seeker. We don't have any question, just relax peacefully. The Buddha closed his eyes. He said, first I will leave the body, then I will leave the mind, then I will leave the heart, and disappear into emptiness. A man from the nearby town who has been postponing for 30 years because Buddha was coming and going through his town again and again, he wanted to meet Buddha, he wanted to ask something, but always some excuse. A customer suddenly came and now he cannot leave the shop, or his wife is sick, or some other business, or he has to go into somebody's marriage. So many times Buddha passed from the town and he had the idea to meet him. He suddenly heard that Buddha is going to die. Now no excuse could prevent him. He rushed to the outside of the city where Buddha's campus was, and he went there and said, I want to ask one question. Ananda said, no. We have told him there is no question, and he has closed his eyes. We don't know how far he has gone, but we cannot call him back. It will be too ungrateful. And he has passed from your town so many times, what you were doing? He said, always some excuse. But Buddha opened his eyes. He said, Ananda, let him ask the question so that the coming centuries nobody can blame me. that somebody has asked a question and I did not answer. But Ananda said, you were almost dead. He said almost, but not completely. I had left the body, I had left the mind, I was just going to leave the heart when I heard. I thought it does not matter if I can delay a little more before disappearing into the ultimate emptiness. But this poor fellow should not remain unanswered. A Buddha lives in freedom in his life and lives in freedom even in his death. Death for him is just an episode, like other episodes of life. Kanchan wrote, people ask the way to Cold Mountain. Cold Mountain? There is no road that goes there. Even in summer, the ice does not melt. Though the sun comes out, the fog is blinding. How can you hope to get there by aping me? Your heart and mine are not alike. If your heart were the same as mine, then you could journey to the very center. Kanchan is saying that followers are not needed. Following is a kind of aping. It is not human. But there is a different kind of being with a master, and that is to bring your heartbeat in tune with his heartbeat. Then you can travel as a fellow traveler to the ultimate center of existence. This can be remembered as a criterion if anybody tries to be your master. In a very subtle way, he is trying to impose a slavery on you. The authentic master is master of himself. He does not want followers. He wants friends, fellow companions, fellow travelers who are ready to be in tune with his heart, in tune with his emptiness. The people who pretend to be masters and are followed by others, even they count. I met one Shankaracharya. And he asked me immediately how many people follow your philosophy. I said, neither I have any philosophy, nor I have met yet any followers. I have friends all around the world. At the most I can say that I am in love with thousands of people. Their heart has come to a certain synchronicity with me, but they are not my followers. But that old Shankaracharya said, that unless you have followers, a great following, you cannot be counted as a great master. He said, I myself have 5,000 followers. I said, you can believe that you are a great master, but according to me, you are a great slave creator. You are taking people's freedom. You cannot be a compassionate sympathizers. You are really bragging about your followers the same way somebody brags about his money, somebody brags about his political power. You are not an authentic master. That night in Firozabad, I had to speak the Shankaracharya has called a meeting and he has invited me, not knowing much about me. And in the morning, in the discussion, it became clear that he has been absolutely wrong in inviting me, because on every point I discussed with him and told him that you are absolutely wrong. In the meeting, what he did, there must have been at least 50,000 people. He had arranged four criminals standing behind me. That if I say anything against tradition or scriptures, then they should immediately put the light off and hit me as much as they can, but his secretary became a little worried. So his secretary came to me just before I was leaving for the meeting, that this is the situation. My suggestion is you should not go. because this is sheer violent mind, because he could not win over on a single point in the morning discussion, and it was a small group of his great disciples. "It is very risky for you to go." I said, "Don't be worried. I told the people that you see four persons are standing behind me. These are all criminals. They belong to your town and you know perfectly well who they are and what can be the purpose for them to stand behind me. Their plan is, the moment I start speaking, to put lights off and hit me or kill me. What do you want? Should I start? Just raise your hands. I don't care about my life. I only care about my freedom. If you are ready to listen, then at any risk I am going to speak. But you can see this violence in the mind of your Shankaracharya. These are his people. Those 50,000 people raised their hands and shouted that I should speak, and if anything happens to you, Shankaracharya cannot leave alive from the stage. I spoke and I hit him as hard as possible. Those four criminals, everybody recognized, they were of their town, they simply disappeared. But this is a very dangerous, now they cannot put the lights off. 50,000 people are with me, and they all were really Shankaracharya's people. But they could see that this is sheer violence and it does not show the intelligence or wisdom of an old Shankaracharya. It shows his stupidity. If he cannot answer, he should accept defeat. But this is not the way to behave. And he has invited me to come. From Bombay I went to his place. I was alone. All people were his people. But even his people could see it, that this is not the way of any enlightened person. The enlightened person is not violent. And to make somebody a disciple, according to me, is a very subtle violence. You are destroying that individual's individuality. You are taking away his freedom in your hands. in this place everybody is an individual. Nobody is superior and nobody is inferior. This is a gathering of people who are in love, of people who are in inquiry for truth. This kind of gathering has disappeared from the world. You are living these moments here with me almost the same climate as Gautam Buddha managed. The same climate as Mahakashyapa managed. It is a different air. It is an air where everybody's potential is respected, loved, where everybody's freedom is the ultimate value. Manisha has asked a question. Beloved Bhagwan, I find it more difficult to disidentify from my feelings than from my thoughts. It seems that this is because my feelings are more rooted in my body. Are feelings closer to the head, in fact, than to the empty heart? This is a fallacy created by the poet. Your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your sentiments, all are centered in your head. It is just a fallacy to think that your feelings are in the heart. Your heart is just a blood pumping station. When we are talking about the empty heart, we are really talking about the empty mind. Buddha has used the word heart instead of mind, because mind has become associated with the idea that it is only the process of thinking, and the process of feeling is in the heart, and heart is deeper. These ideas have been created by the poet. But the truth is, you can call it empty mind or you can call it empty heart. It is the same. Emptiness, you are just a watcher and all around there is nothing with which you are identified. There is nothing with which you are clinging. This non-clinging watchfulness is the empty mind, no mind, or empty heart. These are simply words. The real thing is emptiness of all thoughts, feelings, sentiments, emotions. Only a single point of witnessing remains, and you will find it difficult this identifying from thought is easier, because thoughts are more superficial. This identifying with the feelings is a little difficult because they are deeper and they are rooted more in your biology, in your chemistry, in your hormones. Thoughts are just floating clouds. They are not rooted in your chemistry, in your biology, in your physiology, in your hormones. They are just floating clouds without any roots, but feelings have roots. So it is difficult to uproot them. It is easy to become watchful about the theory of relativity. It is difficult to be a witness about your anger, about your love, about your greed, about your ambition. The reason is they are rooted more deeply in the body, but if you can disidentify yourself from the body, there is no difficulty. And Manisha, being a woman, it is a little more difficult . There are differences between men and women. Mullah Nasruddin was reading his newspaper and suddenly called his wife and said that I have caught 4 flies. 2 are males and 2 are females. The wife said, "My God, how you manage to know their sex?" He said, "Easy. 2 were reading the newspaper with me for hours, and 2 were sitting on the mirror. Completely glued." It is a little difficult, but witnessing is such a sharp sword. It cuts hearts, feelings, emotions in a single blow. And you know it by experience by now. As you go deeper in your meditation, far away is left the body, the emotions, the thoughts. Only the witnessing remains behind. That is your authentic nature. The emptiness of the Buddha's heart. When you are so empty, you are one with the Buddha. You are one with all the Buddhas of all the times, past, present, future. Another question. Beloved Bhagwan, recently I said I felt aware of an emptiness inside and how strange it was to relate to life feelings like that. You suggested I ask all those things one has to do in everyday life. When I don't remember to ask, most of my communication with people to a greater or lesser extent feels something like Ingo's ram with its horns entangled in a fence, but remembering to act, I feel disengaged from people, there is a distance from people and so they don't affect me. Yet curiously, the better I act as if I am loving, the more loving I feel. Can you explain this? It is part of hypnotizing yourself. This is an ancient strategy. Act as if you love. That as if will be forgotten soon. And you will start thinking that you love. But this love is the love of the hypocrite. I don't want you to begin with as if. Just be the Buddha. Why as if? Look at it. Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Do you think he is laughing as if? This is a spontaneity. I am not telling you to do anything as an actor. Be authentic. Be honest. Be totally sincere whatever the consequence, but never move from your center of truthfulness. Now, Gurdayal Singh has laughed, and I have to tell a joke. He starts it, and I cannot disappoint him. What are those two insects doing, Daddy? Ask little Gertrude, who is walking around the garden with her father. Well, mumbles her father, You remember what I told you about the birds and the bees? That is what they are doing. But they are not birds and bees, protect Gertrude. I know, says her father, they are called daddy long legs. Says Gertrude, thinking for a while. So that means, she continues, that the one underneath is a mummy long leg and the one on top is a daddy long leg. No, it is not quite like that, dear, replies her father. They are both daddy long legs. Gertrude thinks again for a moment and then it stamps on the insect. Why did you do that? Asks her surprised father. Why? Repeats Gertrude. I'm not having that sort of thing in my garden. There is a Saturday night shoot out in the OK saloon, and the air is thick with lead bullets. Suddenly the doors swing open and in walks a man who strides straight across the room up to the bar. Immediately all the shootings stop. The barman pops his head up from behind the corner. Friend, he says, that took real courage to walk through those blazing guns without even looking left or right. Not at all, replies the man, looking around casually. You see, I owe money to everyone here. Olga Kobylovsky comes bouncing enthusiastically downstairs in her new Fung Fu house outfit. Kobylovsky takes one look at her, slops his beard and puts his hand over his face. Good God, Olga, groans Kobylovsky, now what are you doing? I am taking Kung Fu lessons, says Olga proudly as she playfully slices the air with her hand, giving Kobylovsky a punch on the neck. It is just in case, explains Olga, some sex fiend tries to rape me on some dark night. Why bother? Remarks Kobylovsky, slurping his beer. It will never get that dark. And Miss Willing, is this the man? Screams the clever liar, Boris Babel Brain, and pointing who you claim has violated you and forcibly taken advantage of your hot, naked, helpless female body. Yes, yes, shouts Miss Willing excitedly, that is the man who did it to me. And please tell the court, continues Babel Brain, his nose in the air as he strides over to the Zuri. Just when did this carnal and erotically perverse act occur? Yes, sir, replies Miss Willing. Just as I remember, it was last June and July and August. Never the known.